We're talking about the year in editorial cartooning here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. So as the impeachment inquiry has unfolded, some editorial cartoonists are saying that the political theater on display is made for rich fodder for their caricatures. And these cartoonists work really fast as the news cycle churns. So what do you think of editorial cartoons? Do you find them entertaining? Do you have an idea for a great political cartoon? Or did one stick with you this year that keeps you laughing? Describe it, 800-642-1234. Phil Hands is editorial cartoonist for the Wisconsin State Journal. He's the only cartoonist on the staff of a newspaper in our state, and we're looking back at some of his works from this year. You can find the slideshow, by the way, over on the Morning Show page at WPR.org. Phil, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
I'm glad to be back here. This is exciting.
I have to say, you are dressed in a very festive way. We've got the Santa tie and the red shirt, so you're decked out for the season.
Yeah, I'm dressed up for radio.
Dressed up for radio. So has the impeachment inquiry and the hearings influenced your work in recent weeks?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have to kind of have your head in the sand to not be drawing about this right now. It is sort of, you know, it's a historical event. It's things that, you know, there's sort of nonstop fodder for cartoons, but it's also sort of it's difficult because as somebody I've been paying attention to a lot of the hearings and I'm watching a lot of stuff, and it's hard to sort of hone in on what a general audience is going to pick out of 9 hours of testimony that I've just watched, you know. So distilling it down to one or two ideas out of 9 hours of politicians blabbing to each other can be difficult.
Right, because there are so many moments, and someone could look at your cartoon and not get it at all if they miss your moment.
Yeah, if they miss the moment that sort of stuck out to me. So it's trying to figure out how to highlight it, and then it's really important when news is changing like this, I try and think, what is going to be relevant in 3 or 4 days? You know, and what are people going to take away from this long-term and not just for that instantaneous moment.
What are some of the common themes that have come up in your work this year?
Trump.
Okay, so one word, right?
You know,
we don't give one word answers here.
We don't give one word answers here? See, in cartooning, the fewer words you use, the better. You know, it's all about
so
the visuals.
True.
No, but, you know, and sort of the idea of the office of the presidency and what it means why we're doing this impeachment and what are high crimes and misdemeanors? What is respect for the office mean? How do we expect our presidents and leaders to act? And Trump has broken a lot of norms about how we expect people to act. Now, I've also said that I've been furious with the Democrats and it feels like I'm watching this impeachment process go through, and it feels like they're railroading a guilty man right now. And the process has been really fast. I did a cartoon in Wednesday's newspaper about how, you know, there's really important people that have not spoken about this whole process yet. And I'd like to hear from them. But it seems like neither the Democrats or Republicans are interested in getting all the information because they've already made up their minds on this.
So how did you portray that in a cartoon?
Oh, I just had I had Uncle Sam saying, "Here's John Bolton, and it'd be nice if we heard something from him." And Democrats said, "We don't need to hear from him. We know he's guilty. We know Trump's guilty." And the Republicans said, "We don't need to hear from him. We know Trump's innocent." So, I mean, sometimes it's just basically that was a very wordy cartoon, but sometimes you just sort of lay out your exact argument in the cartoon form.
What kind of influence does a political cartoonist have?
I like to think a lot. No, I mean, it is interesting because we're both entertainers and commentators. So I hear from people who read the paper on a regular basis and in the general audience in Madison and how much I bring them joy, you know, and they enjoy reading the stuff and the cartoons and it's fun and it's entertaining. But I do hear from like local leaders, you know, if I draw a cartoon about Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway in Madison, you know, she's going to see it and if she doesn't like it, she's going to tell us about it. And the same with Governor Evers or former Governor Scott Walker. You know, it's fun to see that they're reading the content that I create, and I don't know how much it influences their policy decisions, but they know somebody's watching that, and if they screw up too bad, somebody's going to draw a funny picture about them.
We're talking with Phil Hands. He's editorial cartoonist for the Wisconsin State Journal. Looking at his work through the year, how do you feel about political cartoons? Do you like them? Do you think cartoons will be important going into the 2020 elections? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Phil, do leaders quibble about your drawing of them and the actual caricature itself and what it looks like?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I had a fun exchange with Governor Walker back in the day when he was still governor. And he said, he pulled me aside after an editorial board meeting and said, you know, Phil, you draw my ears too big and they're too low on my head. But I will say you got that bald spot just right. But just so you know, the bald spot is not male pattern baldness. I was working on a cabinet one day and I hit my head in the cabinet, and Tonette, my wife, said, you have to go to the doctor, Scott. You have to go to the doctor. I wouldn't listen to her. And when I finally went to the doctor said, oh, the hair's never going to grow back on your head. That's what he told me. I'm not sure I believe it for all a right, second, but right. That's what he told me.
So did you adjust the ears?
No. Why would forward? I do that? That's how I see his ears. You know, I did make the bald spot bigger.
So in July, you drew this cartoon of President Trump as a slug, kind of snail-like creature.
Oh, yeah.
with his famous, you know, comb-over and a presidential tie around this slug's neck. Where did the inspiration for this drawing come from?
I think it was just, I don't know if he said it. It was something he said. I think he said, I don't have a racist bone in my body. And I sort of said, well, what doesn't have bones? Slugs. And so, you know, so here's this slug, and he's right. You know, I don't have a racist bone in my body, but he's still a slug. And it's just sort of the image stuck out in my mind. And that's one of those images there. It's radio doesn't quite do that one justice, because you kind of have to see it to believe it.
You have to see it. And as I said, we have the slideshow up on WPR.org on the morning show page. So we're approaching 2020 elections. It's really heating up. What does your workload look like during an election year?
Well, learning how to draw how many candidates are still running for the Democratic office, right? Democratic candidacy right now?
We'll count tonight. How many are
I mean, so I've had to learn how to draw like all of these people. Before I came on the air, I was drawing Pete Buttigieg right now, you know. So I don't like drawing cartoons that have 14 different Democrats in them. It's hard.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot more work. But it's, you know, I'm not going to do too much until we sort of needle down the race to figure out who's legit.
Whose ears matter?
Whose ears matter? I love it. Yeah. Whose bald spot matters?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, you know, Joe Biden be fun to draw. Pete Buttigieg would be fun to draw.
Well, you Bernie probably have a little bit of an archive of Biden. Did you draw him at all?
Yeah. I've drawn Biden before. Creepy mm-hmm. Uncle Joe. Yeah, I've drawn him before. And I've done a lot. You know, Bernie Sanders is just a character in and of himself. It's hard to caricature Bernie Sanders because he's already sort of this lampoonish character. And Elizabeth Warren's fun to draw. So they're all.
Wait, why is she fun to draw?
She just has, you know, she's something about her is unique, and she has these unique facial features, and she's got these little chubby cheeks and this nice wisp of hair that just sort of the hair is you can silhouette it, and you can tell exactly who it is because of the way her hair is. And that
she works well for an editorial cartoonist.
She can and she's got these great gestures that she does, and she fires people up, and she's, you know, her sleeves are always halfway up her arm when she's throwing her fist in the air and really pumped up. So those are things that we look at as a cartoonist, and we make fun of.
It is the year in political cartooning. With Phil Hands as our guide, he's the Wisconsin State Journal staff cartoonist. Is there a particularly memorable political cartoon that you want to bring up? Do you have an idea for a political cartoon? What have you always wanted to know about editorial cartoonists but never had a chance to ask? Join in, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment with Phil Hands right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Editorial cartoonists, they work in caricature, they find nuance in the day's news cycle, and they poke fun at all political stripes. And if you read The New Yorker, do you look at the cartoons first? I sure do. What do you think of editorial cartoons? Do you find them entertaining? What news outlets do you gravitate to for political cartoons? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Phil Hand stays with us. He's editorial cartoonist for the Wisconsin State Journal. You know, Phil, you said in the lobby you were, you know, you're sketching right there, Pete Buttigieg. Where and when do you work? What is your day like?
I work all the time. so, you know, it's great. The State Journal has strict hours that we're allowed to work. So, we have a 37 and a half hour work week, which is awesome because there's time to, you know, pick the kids up after school. But when you're an editorial cartoonist, you never quite turn your brain off and you never quite, you know, You never quite stop. So if a cartoon idea strikes me in the shower, which they do, believe it. I mean, that's not a cliche. That actually happens quite a lot. You know, I write it down. I mean, after I get out of the shower.
So you get out of the shower and write it down.
I've probably washed the shampoo out of the hair first, and then I get out of the shower and write it down. But, you know, so, you know, I go to an office most days of the week, like a regular person does. But, you know, the brain is always working, you know, and you know, I do a lot of I love to jog, and jogging is a great way to like clear your head, and the ideas just come in. I often listen to Wisconsin Public Radio while I'm jogging.
Nice.
And I just wait for the ideas to pop into the brain, and it works, you know.
So how far do you get into an idea before you have to show it to your editor and say, "Hey, can I go the extra mile here and do this?"
It's usually fully formed in my head.
Okay.
You know, so I don't, you know, we don't like to, and sometimes I'll add some little details at the end or, you know, just little drawings to make it a little more fun. But the idea has to be the concept, and if the joke has to be there ahead of time before it goes through the editor. And, you know, we have a pretty, my editor's awesome. He's amazing if he's listening. But, you know, he gives me enough leash to hang myself whenever I need to do that. You know, he lets me put myself out there. He's great. And, but we have he makes me better, you know? So I think he says, well, you can do better than that sometimes, which is good. You know, mm-hmm. that's what we want in an editor. We have somebody to push us and not just, you know,
do you ever get
down.
A no?
Oh, absolutely. All the time. Usually it's for, that's not funny, Phil. You can do better, you know. So
So
I get no's all the time. I'm used to rejection, though.
So in your cartoons, you know, you poke fun. Oftentimes, President Trump is there in your cartoons, and one you have here is a drawing with the president, a Trump supporter, demanding that you stop disrespecting the office of the president. And your character's response is, "I'll stop when he stops." You were drawing yourself there.
Absolutely. That's kind of, I mean, sometimes you just put yourself in that space. And that would happen to me. People would call me up and say, "Stop disrespecting the man. He is the president. We have to respect the office." And, you know, I would shoot back at callers that, like, no, I'll stop disrespecting it when he stops. And finally I decided I got to just put this in a cartoon. And that's my, I mean, it's fun because if you look at that cartoon, that's what my desk looks like. I've got pictures of my kids in the background and little tiny details.
Yeah, you got three pictures here. And then I love the sign, cartoonist at work.
Yes. I don't actually have that at my desk, but yeah.
But I could definitely see that. Oh, I like the little inkwell here.
Yeah, I actually use ink.
Do you really?
I use ink.
Do you dip it? Are you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a little inkwell and I dip a brush into it. And then I use that to do the thick lines on the outlines of my cartoons.
How are your ears? I think
you seem like you really like ears and cartoons, and it's always an afterthought for me. I'm more of a nose man, really.
Oh, I see. Yeah, look at your nose. What is that thing? It looks like almost like a wart or something. You have a lot of detail in your noses. I see that. There's this one cartoon in our slideshow. It's like the Beatles' Abbey Road.
Oh yeah.
What's going on there?
Well, so Paul McCartney played a show in Madison this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I went to the show. It was awesome.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, well, what would it look like, you know, how can we welcome Paul Madison Paul McCartney to Madison, not Paul Madison. And so I did this cartoon, and I had Paul walking across Abbey Road in front of the Capitol building, and I just sort of added some quintessential Madison things like a terrace chair and a flamingo and Bucky Badger. So I just wanted to do something that was really fun, you know. And I thought that was sort of a nice way to. I don't think he ever saw it. He didn't tweet at me saying thanks, Phil, for that awesome cartoon, which would have been great. But no.
Yeah, no, that was really fun. And how easy did that come to you?
Pretty easily. Yeah, I was thinking of iconic Beatles images, and there's nothing more iconic than that. So yeah, that's the kind of thing. You know, political cartoons, I like to think that I don't always want to be hard-hitting and mean and criticizing people. Sometimes it's really fun to just sort of talk about the quirks in your community, and it's great to do that because it brings other people in. So people often say that I just hate Trump, I'm just a Trump hater, but if you see a cartoon about Paul McCartney coming to Madison, it's harder to hate me, you know? So
yeah, this is, I mean, who couldn't hate the Beatles, right?
That's right.
We're talking with Phil Hands, editorial cartoonist for the Wisconsin State Journal. You can still join in here, 800-642-1234. Phil, let's look at the Faces of Homelessness cartoon.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good one.
What's going on here?
Well, so the State Journal's been doing a series on homelessness, uh-huh. And we've been focusing on this as an issue in our community and our state for several years now. And one of the things that we've learned is that, you know, we see, you know, if you live in Madison or in the area, you'll see people who sleep on the streets, and we sort of think of them as homeless, as the homeless. But the people who are homeless is such a larger community than just people sleeping on streets on the Capitol Square. You know, there's single parents who sleep in their cars. There's children in schools who don't, you know, we have thousands of kids in Wisconsin who don't have permanent places to stay. And lots of people that don't have, housing are working. And so there's a person working there.
A barista,
yeah, pouring coffee.
Pouring coffee. You know, it could be someone at a lunch counter, like a diner.
Like a diner or something like that. But so yeah. I just wanted to say that, like, there's, you know, homelessness is a bigger issue than just what we think of it, people sleeping on the street.
All right, so we're going to go to the moon next, July 1960. Wow, when our nation works together, we can do anything. Just think of where we'll be 50 years from now.
Yeah. I mean, isn't it sort of discouraging to think that 50 years ago, we all pulled together as this nation and put a person on the moon, put two people on the moon, and, you know, and now we can't even decide what the facts of a phone call with between the president and President Ukraine is? I mean, like, it's sort of disturbing that our country, we just can't pull it together.
So your work is syndicated, but you're based here in Wisconsin. What does this mean for the issues that you pick up? If you're syndicated and your cartoons are going to be seen elsewhere, how local do you get and how national do you get? Do you think about those things?
Not too much. I mean, I always want to be the cartoonist from Wisconsin. You know, that's always really important. But not every cartoon has to show that I'm from Wisconsin, you know, because my cartoons do appear in newspapers across the country. I now get hate mail from all over the place, which is great. But I try to do a lot of local cartoons about our governor, about our mayor, about city issues in Madison and stuff going on in the state, because that's what makes me special at the newspaper. That's, you can't get that anywhere else, you know. So that's really a focus. But I've gotten to the point in my career now where other people around the country really want to see what I'm talking about. So that's exciting and it's interesting. But I will always be that guy from always be that cartoonist from Wisconsin.
We have time for a quick call here, Jim in Cedarburg. Hi, Jim.
Hi, morning. Thank you. I have a couple of suggestions. I wish I could draw like you, but here's the first one. The heading would be immigration reform, and you'd have Lady Liberty walking down the Supreme Courthouse stairs, throwing her torch down in disgust. And the second one would be labeled No Quid Pro Quo, portrait of Trump with a parrot who resembles Mitch McConnell on his shoulder, and the air bubble would read Mitch saying what he said.
Yeah, those are both fun ideas. I actually have drawn Trump with a parrot on his shoulder before, except the parrot was a tweeting bird.
Oh.
I thought that was – I drew Trump as a pirate at one time. And Lady Liberty as an image for immigration's always something that is great to do. I did a cartoon once that Scott Walker when Scott Walker was took a stance on immigration. I drew Scott Walker's late delivery with a sign that said no vacancy on him. So that was
Jim. Thanks so much for calling in. In our last minute here, you have a podcast.
Yeah,
called Center Stage
with Milford and Hands.
With Milford and Hands, Milford being your editor.
Yeah, Scott Milford, the editorial page editor. Yep.
And so, what's happening to later today?
So later today, every year a columnist does these political Christmas carols, and we're going to go to our studio in the State Journal offices and record. We're going to sing the Christmas carols, so it'll be fun.
Go ahead, Phil Nouns.
Okay. Oh, little town of Buttigieg, it's also called South Bend. He ran the place, then ran for pres. Will wonders never end? So calm, so cool, so classy, his lifestyle so discreet, that even total skeptics find there's good with Mayor Pete. I'm not warmed up yet.
Phil, thank you so much for joining us. This was one of a kind.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Phil Hands, editorial cartoonist, Wisconsin State Journal. We have a slideshow up, 10 of his cartoons from this year. Find it on the Morning Show page at WPR.org. Coming up, we talk about the resurrection of the fanny pack. They were popular in the 80s. Then we scoffed them for decades. We'll discuss those in a moment. Back after this news update here on the Ideas Network. We're dipping in, taking a moment here to acknowledge fanny packs here on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Whatever you care to call them, here are some suggestions. Waist bag, waist belt, bum bag, hip sling. Variations of the fanny pack have been around for thousands of years. And the accessories industry is crediting this doodad clipped around our waist for providing a really healthy sales bump in the fashion area. So how do you feel about fanny packs? Are you wearing one right now? Tell us what you think. Where do you go with yours? 800-642-1234. Beth Goldstein is a fashion footwear and accessories industry analyst at the NPD Group in New York. Beth, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having me.
So why have fanny packs become more popular now in recent years? What's this resurgence?
Well, I think there are a few things. One, the athleisure trend, where everyone is running around in their, you know, athletic wear, whether they're going to the gym or not, has led us to really get used to this very casual and comfortable way of dressing. And consumers have taken a liking to being hands-free. So we've also seen backpacks grow. But fanny packs made a particular emergence. First of all, we're also in this area, this time of, you know, where retro is cool. So a lot of things from the 80s and 90s have come back into style. Designers started showing fanny packs being worn a bit differently. So not necessarily, you know, around the fanny or the bum, you know, wearing them just across the chest or, you know, just across the shoulder.
Kind of like man purse territory?
Exactly, and we've definitely seen a growth. I mean, there are many that are just gender neutral, so we're seeing men and women wearing them. There are some that are made just, you know, for men, some for women, and we've seen it, you know, really become popular for both genders.
We asked followers of a Wisconsin Reddit group about fanny packs. A bow hunter called them essential gear, kind of like a hunting utility belt. There was a cyclist who said they were great for holding water, keys, or a can of beer. And then another person liked them because women's jeans often have tiny or non-existent pockets. So what about their versatility?
Yeah, so, I mean, now, you know, the one issue is that you can't necessarily carry very much, but, you know, as we look to simplify and realize that we don't need to carry everything we own everywhere, and plus our phones are increasingly becoming our wallets, you know, they can hold the essentials. So your phone, keys, maybe a couple of cards if you need them, a lip balm. So, you know, and then if you sling it across your chest, like everything is just right there for you to easily access. And, you know, everyone from, I guess, you know, bow hunters and cyclists to just, you know, busy moms are liking them because they've got their hands free for everything else that they need to do and carry.
So when you look at your numbers, which shoppers seem to be driving the uptick in sales? Like what generation?
I mean, mean, it is primarily the younger generations, I would say, you know, millennials and younger, maybe some, you know, I'll include myself here and say, you know, the younger Gen X set at, on down. So it definitely is kind of a resurgence of, excuse me, you know, coming from younger consumers who are, you know, the ones that are really taking a liking to more retro products, you know, in general, like, you know, sneakers and, you know, bold colors from the 80s and 90s.
How are major fashion designers approaching fanny packs? Are they selling them?
They are. They are. And, you know, they're selling them better than, you know, unfortunately, many other types of bags, as just, you know, the general bag business has been very tough. Fanny packs has been a bright spot. Now, it isn't compensating for losses elsewhere because it still is a small category, but sales have, you know, in the last 3 years, you know, almost tripled in fanny packs.
Well, you say the bag industry, and I think, you know, Kate Spade for sure, they've been also marketing them as belt bags, which seems mm-hmm. like an effort to kind of distance themselves from the whole fanny pack genre. What are they doing?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, calling them different things, and then, you know, because the fanny pack has a, you know, it kind of reminds you of, you know, your grandpa's little fanny pack when he, you know, went on vacation. But, you know, they are very functional, so they are, you know, calling them waist packs or belt bags or, you know, bum bags, like you said, and we're now seeing a new sort of generation of products that, while a fanny pack can, you know, just be worn slung across the chest, there are some bags now that are really made just to be worn across the chest, you know, a chest rig. I've seen bags attached to, you know, to legs. I've seen boots come down the runway with little pouches on them.
So oh, yeah, Prada. I saw that yesterday. Prada yes. has these, like, boots, these combat boots.
Boot with a little pouch.
What's right. going on there?
You know what? It's just all about added functionality and convenience. You know, that's not going to become, you know, a mainstream thing. But what's happened over the last few years is that function has become cool. So even if a product is, you know, kind of ugly, if it's very functional, it's cool. So, you know, they've come into fashion.
We're talking about the return of fanny packs with Beth Goldstein. She's a fashion industry analyst at the NPD Group in New York. And you can join in. How do you feel about fanny packs? Did you wear them years ago? Have you started wearing fanny packs again recently? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I know, Beth, when I had twins, there was another mom who wore a fanny pack, and she could stuff a diaper in there, pacifier. She had wipes. She had her credit card. And my jaw dropped. I was like, this is a major breakthrough for my arms. And I got a fanny pack at that moment. A matter of fact, she shipped one to me, like her exact model. And it was just one of these really great, convenient things. What type of materials are you seeing in fanny packs?
You know what? It's across the spectrum. Certainly there are leather ones, but, you know, the nylon has been very popular because it's very lightweight and, you know, very, you know, versatile, you know, very durable. But it really does run across the spectrum. And, you know, obviously, you know, the biggest sellers are going to be simple, you know, black. But, you know, this is a good opportunity to grab a little color because, you know, it's nothing, they're not huge. So it's actually a good way to, you know, have a pop of color as well. So, you know, really across the spectrum.
How are brick and mortar retailers approaching fanny packs? Do you see them at your mainstream Target or Walmart?
Yes. And in fact, some of those, you know, more mass retailers have really done well with them, a variety of styles. And actually, you'll see a lot of clear fanny packs as well. That's another thing to mention, as more stadiums, more schools require clear bags. For security purposes, a fanny pack has proven to be a good solution to that because you can just, you know, the few things you need to take to that concert, put in a fanny pack. It's not that expensive if you need to buy a new one and, you know, you're ready to go and you're meeting the security requirements.
Yeah, and those plastic ones too. So they're clear you know, also probably waterproof at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
How are contemporary fanny packs different than the ones you were seeing in the 80s?
The material, the styling, you know, well, in the 80s, you think about, you know, that one kind of pouch-like fanny pack. It might have had, you know, a tag on it that said whatever, you know, brand it was. But these are much more varied. I mean, they're a little less bulky, so maybe a little bit flatter. They, you know, have a little bit of an edge, whether it be studs or, you know, fringe. So it's really what designers have done, you know, across the handbag spectrum over the last, you know, 10, 15 years, you know, they've now incorporated into fanny packs.
Well, let's bring in Jessica now, joining us from Trempolo. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. So I just have a comment about the fanny packs. I really love them for convenience and comfort over fashion. Not that some of them aren't really fashionable, but I find that I get a lot of tension, migraines, and headaches from carrying around a purse or something on my shoulder. So this is a really great way to be able to alleviate that and also have the hands-free aspect and not worrying about having to set down your purse or your other bag.
Oh, right, because it's always around you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when did you start wearing fanny packs?
Probably just recently, maybe in the last year or so is when I got, I mean, I've had them when I was younger, of course, but I didn't, you know, stick with that fad. Now that I've seen them more fashionable, I thought, okay, let's give this a try. And I realized, okay, this is definitely a way to help alleviate my headaches or my migraines that I get when carrying something on my shoulder.
Yeah, Jessica, thank you so much for calling in. Beth, you know, redistributing that weight has really made a difference for Jessica.
Yeah, absolutely. And given that you can wear it, you know, you can put it on your waist or you can put it across your chest or, you know, turn it around and put it across your back almost. And that's a similar thing that we've seen in backpacks where, you know, women in particular are getting sick of, you know, the big heavy tote bag on their shoulder that's really causing a lot of pain. So obviously fanny packs are, you know, better just maybe for running around on the weekend. But for work, especially in New York City, I mean, the backpack has become the new commuting bag for men and women. We see that all the time, and I think that's a big piece of it, the comfort aspect.
Do you think fanny packs are being embraced by men and women, or do you see it more with one gender or another?
I think if we looked at the distribution, we'd see it a little bit, you know, more skewed towards women, but it certainly, you know, especially, you know, at the very high, you know, fashion end has been embraced by men, you know, in certain, you know, urban areas.
We're talking fanny packs with Beth Goldstein. She's a fashion, footwear, and accessories industry analyst. Search YouTube or streaming music services, and you will find all sorts of tributes to fanny packs. The song we're going to be listening to here now is called Fanny Pack by Sophia Aris, and she is a Minneapolis-based artist who's been touring with hip-hop sensation Lizzo. What do you think of fanny packs? Do you love them or hate them? Join in 800-642-1234. Tweet us all things fanny packs at WPR Mornings. We'll be back in just a moment. Beth Goldstein here on the Ideas Network.
Sippin' on yak in the leg. I got my fanny pack. Zip it up, pack it in. Click the bell, time for the win. I got my fanny pack. Pack it up, bring it back. Come on. Flick, clack, snap, put a strap. I got my fanny pack. What? I got my fanny pack.
We're talking about the rise, fall, and resurrection of fanny packs. That's right, it's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and I'm wearing one with pride as we speak. Fanny pack was my go-to mom mode when the twins were born. Baby in each arm, fanny pack at my waist, two diapers inside, keys, wipes, pacifiers, my ID, all fit. We're listening to Fanny Pack Party by Rikus. That's a German pop group that released its debut album, Showtime, this year. I'm the one with the fanny pack. Are you partying in your fanny pack this morning. Do you love them or hate them? Do you prefer to call them belt bags? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Fashion industry analyst Beth Goldstein stays with us. So, Beth, thanks for allowing us to party a little bit in our fanny pack. You mentioned that fanny pack sales have tripled in recent years. Do you know roughly how many are being sold?
Yeah, I can give you that. It is about, so far, year-to-date ending October, so in 2019, we've actually seen almost 9 million units being sold.
9 million fanny packs are out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's quite a few.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's after strong growth the last couple of years as well.
How much have fanny packs helped boost retail sales of fashion accessories overall?
Well, you know, I mentioned earlier that the business, you know, here is very tough as consumers, you know, have switched gears and have, you know, been spending in other areas. You know, maybe for their home or maybe on, you know, technology. And, you know, the bag business, you know, traditional handbags has really suffered. Fanny packs have been very strong, but it's still a very small category in the grand scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
So it hasn't really, you know, it's helped to, you know, mitigate some of the declines we've seen elsewhere, but, you know, it hasn't really pushed anything into growth.
What other accessories are doing quite well that you have your eye on?
Well, earlier I mentioned backpacks, and we're still seeing some strength there, although that's slowing down as they become a little bit more saturated. But, you know, even within, you know, so there's the backpack that's used, you know, kind of a bigger backpack that you can take to work or the gym. But then fashion backpacks had been doing really well as an alternative to the traditional handbag. So like a fanny pack, maybe a small backpack or a little bit more fashion-oriented was a good alternative there, a little bit more comfortable and functional. We have seen what's interesting and related, I believe, to the growth of some of those smaller bags and fanny packs is when you're looking at smaller accessories, whereas sales of traditional wallets, you know, bigger wallets have been soft, sales of smaller card cases have been very strong, and I think that's because, you know, that fits in a fanny pack, right? Or it fits in a smaller bag. And
wait, what is a card case? Can you describe it?
So it's just a little, you know, a little, it almost is shaped like a card itself, and it might have a couple of slots, and you can put, you know, your ID, and you can put a couple of credit cards. You can even squeeze in a few bills if you need to, and, you know, pop it into that fanny pack. So it's a very small. Also, they sell ones that stick on the back of the phone. So really, your phone is like your life, right? If it wasn't already. And all that can fit into a fanny pack or a small bag as, you know, women have kind of moved away from some of those, you know, huge tote bags. So we're seeing that as well. And then in addition, because travel has become so popular and, you know, traveling smart and having the best product for travel, like I mentioned earlier, function is cool and everybody's really concerned with function. We've seen growth in luggage and, you know, suitcases and luggage sets and, you know, related products, you know, that consumers are buying to, you know, make travel easier for them.
Yeah, how is jewelry doing in relation to what you're talking about, wearable tech?
Yeah, so jewelry has also been tough. So, you know, that's been in the negative. So, you know, in just the last year, the jewelry market, you know, we look at the first 10 months of the year, it's down 8%. There have been bright spots in jewelry. The price points, you know, that are lower have been better. And, you know, you're seeing a lot of a little bit more delicate jewelry out there that's able to be mixed and matched versus, you know, paying a lot of money for one, you know, signature piece. You know, I might want three or four bracelets on my arm and I'm kind of creating my own look. And maybe I'm engraving, maybe I'm choosing charms. You know, Pandora, I have to say, when I did, you know, mall walks around, you know, Black Friday weekend, that was, you know, one of the busiest stores. So while that business is tough overall, I think there are pockets where there's personalization and where things are, you know, a little bit more affordable.
Are people buying traditional watches anymore?
Well, watches overall has been challenged as a business, and, you know, the rise of smartwatches certainly has contributed to that. But there is growth, and we have actually, a watch analyst at NPD, and he's really following the growth of the luxury sector. So there really is still interest at that, you know, like $25,000 and above price point.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, even though that watch doesn't get your emails and all of that jazz, it certainly has bling.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And it may be a supplement. You know, you might also have a smartwatch that you wear sometimes, but, you know, sometimes you're gonna wear your fancy watch.
We're discussing the return of accessories, fanny packs in particular. Beth Goldstein is here. She's a fashion industry analyst at the NPD Group in New York. You can join in. Have you considered buying a new accessory? What about a fanny pack? What are you looking for in terms of style or function? How would you feel if someone gave you a fanny pack this holiday season? Would you wear it? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Beth, the upcoming sequel to Wonder Woman takes place in the 80s, and according to the trailers, we can make out that Chris Pine will be wearing a fanny pack in the film. What role have movies or TV played in bringing back fanny packs?
Well, you know, I actually think that it's been a lot about social media as well. So I think, you know, what you see on TV has an impact, but in this case, social media and brands that have emerged, you know, we kind of call them, you know, it's a nickname like Instagram brands. So, you know, startup, digitally native, you know, brands that are selling directly to consumers and are really, you know, promoting a lot on social media have really driven the category as well as other functional product. And, you know, there's brands out there, you know, Dagny Dover is one of them that, you know, comes to mind that has really, you know, breathed a little bit of new life into the category by focusing on the function, you know, and mixing that obviously with the style. Their bags are in neoprene, which is really kind of interesting.
Huh, yeah. Well, yeah. Beth, you know, the 1980s gets such a hang up with the mullet and all that went on in the 80s, but I'm wondering, are there some things that are coming back? And, you know, I'm asking about leg warmers, just asking for a friend.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, leg warmers have kind of been around the last couple of years.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, in addition to be a fashion item, again, they're pretty functional. You know, I put them on when I'm running to the gym in, you know, in the winter if I'm not wearing, you know, really long tights on me. You know, it's a way that allows me to wear, you know, shorter leggings to the gym. So I think the functionality of that, and again, the comeback, you know, the acceptance, is interesting that consumers that weren't necessarily around or, you know, were very, very young during the original phase, you know, are really picking up on these things because of kind of the heritage of it, you know.
Yeah.
Well,
there's a bit of nostalgia in it
exactly.
as well. Yeah.
Exactly. And you see parents, you know, millennial parents or even, you know, a little bit older than that, you know, dressing their kids these, you know, the things that they wore as kids, you know, brands like Champion, Fila, you know, have come back over the last year or so because, you know, they harken back to when they were kids and they're like, oh, I'm going to put my own kids in this stuff.
Well, let's take a quick call. Scotty in Libertyville, Illinois. Hi, Scotty.
Hi.
All right. How's your fanny pack? I've never thought I would say that on the radio.
Yeah, and this is funny. I just think it's a weird thing, and this is why I called, because I go to England every year for business, and it turns out in the UK, in England anyway, they don't refer to a fanny as, like, you know, a person's butt. They refer to that, that's referred to as slang for, like, ladies' genitalia.
Yeah.
And I wondered if you'd want to point that out. And I heard that song that you played, and I was just kind of laughing, like, really? You know? Anyway, I thought I'd call with that and just let people know that if they go to England, they might want to just not call it that.
Yes.
Scotty, thank you so much.
Australia.
Yeah. Beth, we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thanks so much for having me.
Beth Goldstein, fashion, footwear, and accessories industry analyst at the NPD Group in New York. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to Fanny Pack or Not, the Ideas Network.